Before we get into John 9, look at John chapter 20. John chapter 20, Jesus appears to his disciples after his resurrection. At first, they do not believe it's him. And he invites them. Thomas wasn't there, of course, and he didn't believe the testimony of the others. So that a week later, he met. Thomas was there, and he invited Thomas, verse 25. Thomas said, "Lest I see in his hands the imprints of the nails, I won't believe." So 8 days later, he's with them. Thomas, he invited Thomas to reach forth his finger and see his hand, verse 27, and be believing. Whether Thomas did or not, we do not know, but he did conclude, "My Lord and my God." Jesus' next statement is very interesting. He said, "Because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are they who did not see and yet believed." How? Verse 30 and 31. "Therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these have been written so that you may believe." So the miracles that Jesus performed, the record of them, are so that we can read that record and conclude, reach a conclusion as to the credibility of the claim that he's the Son of God. That's what the last part of 31 says. So as you go into John, you start out way back in chapter 4. And actually back in chapter 2, where he turned the water to wine. And then in chapter 4, that was a very interesting miracle in itself, in view of the fact it was in the presence of many, and the head waiter verified what Jesus did. Then in chapter 4, the end of the verse, a miracle involving a royal official, involving the healing of his son. So the first one involved wine, this one involved a man's son. And over distance, Jesus cured that boy. Then you come here to chapter 9, and you have this remarkable and somewhat detailed description of this miracle. It's a miracle that was thoroughly examined. And then you get to chapter 11, and you get even to if it were like the climax continues to increase, you have the story of the raising of Lazarus. And then you get to the end of the Gospel of John and you get to the pinnacle. And that is Jesus' own resurrection from the dead. John didn't record a lot of miracles, separate events. But certainly the ones he recorded are sufficient proof for what the gospel proclaimed, that is, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. This particular one that we're studying is so valuable for our faith, valuable in studying with others when we look at the details of this particular chapter, and a tremendous lesson for us when we see Jesus' commendation of this man, because the blind man was able to see. So we'll look at that as we go through the chapter. We learned some lessons that are not the focus of the chapter, but they're valuable lessons. That's the first question on the sheet. As we get into chapter 1, it says he passed by, saw a man blind from birth. And so we ask the question on the lesson, why did the disciples believe this man suffered blindness from birth? Because of sin, either his or his parents. And if you're familiar with the book of Job, you know that that was at one time a very widespread, evidently, at least Job and his three friends, very good men. We know Job was a good man. Have no reason to doubt that his three friends were not either, well, that they were good men. But they held the view that if you're suffering, it's because of your sin. And the disciples say either the man sinned or his parrot sinned, some kind of punishment. What is the reverse of that kind of reasoning? So if your life is good and you're not suffering, what's the conclusion?
You must be all right.
Anybody reason that way? I'll guarantee you they do. I must not be so bad. Look, things are good for me. God must love me. Yes, Mark? I had a fellow tell me one time I was studying with that had a wart healed on his hand. And that must have been an indication that what he believed was true. Know anybody like that, Mark? Yeah. But Mark had a good heart and he was willing to accept the truth. But that's the reasoning sometimes that we have. And so it's a fallacious reasoning. What was Jesus' response? Neither one. So Jesus, they said, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he'd be born blind? And so people have tragedies in their life. Their children are born with defects. And they will attribute that maybe to God being punishing them. That's not it. We live in a world where sin ruined everything. We suffer the consequences of genetic problems. We suffer the consequences of other people's sins, drinking, drugs, all kinds of things like that. And so we just live in a world that's plagued by those things. And because people are born with defects and problems doesn't mean that it's a punishment for sin. So he said, neither this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. But don't take that to mean God purposed and planned for this man to be born blind so that the works of God might be shown in him. Sometimes this little word that's translated so that does talk about purpose and aim, but sometimes it talks about result. There's a number of examples of that. And so if you look back at verse 3, you have the same word in verse 3, and it's translated that, so that. And so it says, neither this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. I meant to go back to verse 2. Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind? Clearly there it's not purpose and aim. They're not asking, did the parents sin so they'd have a blind son? They're not asking that. It's with the result that they would have a blind son. Or did he sin with the result that he had this malady? And so this is a circumstance. And God will use circumstances in life for his purposes. And you see that here. So that the result of this is going to be a good result. The works of God might be displayed in him. Jesus' statement in verse 4 and 5, and when you got to the end of the lesson, we always ask the question, what do you learn about Jesus? And it's interesting, his statement here in verse 4 and 5. He sees a blind man, certainly has compassion for the man. He has the power to heal him, but there's more. There's more to it than that. And that's true with the miracles of Jesus. Yes, he had compassion when people were hungry. He did. He had compassion with the woman whose son was dead, the widow of Nain. He did. But there was more to it than that. Doug, you had a comment. The rabbi wasn't asking the question. They're calling Jesus rabbi.
Okay.
But rabbis would have asked that question. That's true. They said to Jesus, rabbi. And so, which means, of course, teacher. And so, In verse 4, he said, "We must work the works of him who sent me as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world." Does this point to why Jesus is going to work this miracle? Is it just to heal a blind man? What's it going to demonstrate?
It says in verse 3 that the works of God may just be displayed.
Right, and that's true. That's a good answer. What particularly does Jesus mention?
He's going to be resurrected.
Huh?
He's going to be resurrected.
In this verse? That's true, but what does he mention in the context?
He's the light of the world.
He's the light of the world. Is he the light of the world? Well, let's see what's going to happen. That's quite a claim, isn't it? The light of the world? He said, I've only got 3+ years. He knew that. It's not stated there. He knew it. And he said, I've got to work while it's day. I've got to do the kind of things that will give the world evidence that I am who I claim to be. It's interesting, after he healed the blind man, back down in verse 35, Jesus heard they had put him out. They had excommunicated him. Get out of here. In finding him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You've both seen him, and he is the one talking with you." He wanted this man to believe. What's his name? I don't know. Jesus did. Where did he live? I don't know, but Jesus did. Was he famous or powerful or rich? Do not know. It doesn't make any difference. Jesus wanted this man to believe. He not only wanted him to believe, he wanted to provide the evidence that this man could found his faith on, build his faith on. And so I must work the works of him who sent me out to show that I am the light of the world. Over and over, we have the verses on your lesson. In fact, a little bit further down in the lesson. One of these questions, I think I put them on there. Yes, down on question D, 2D. Got a number of verses there that deal with this concept of the works of Jesus being evidence for who he is. Look at 2D there, at some of those verses that I have there. Look at John chapter 5 and verse 36. "The testimony I have is greater than John." So what is he appealing to? What appeal is he making as far as John is concerned relative to his credibility or evidence for believing in him? What does he appeal to in John? Yes, Mark?
Well, for one thing, the people believe that John was a prophet.
What miracles did John perform? Well, what does Jesus say that there's something about John that should add to his credibility? He mentions it right here.
His works are greater than John.
He didn't say works.
Witness is greater than John. I'm sorry.
Okay. Your verb may say witness. This one says testimony. John contribution to the identity of Christ was testimony. Testimony. Jesus began verse 31 with his own testimony. But he recognized, according to law, that wasn't enough. I'm not expected to believe just one man's testimony. So I got another one. That's John. But then he comes down to 36. He said, "The testimony which I have is greater than the testimony of John." Now, here's something else that testifies. This time it's not human testimony. What is it in 36?
God the Father.
What? No, 36.
The works.
You're right. You're ahead of me there, Javier. You're right. later talk about God the Father, which testifies through the Scriptures. But here's the works that he does. And so you see Jesus appealing to the works. What works? The fact that he was baptized, or the fact that he traveled from city to city, or the fact that he ate, or what works?
Miracles.
Things that would be a sign, and they're called signs. Things that would excite wonder, they're called wonders. Things that would demonstrate power, and they're called powers. So I got works to do. And so you look in chapter 10. And verse 37, if I do not do the works of my Father, do not believe me. But if I do them, though you do not believe me, believe the works, so that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I in the Father. So the works he did were designed to give testimony to his claims to be the light of the world. And he says, this man's blindness is going to be used to a higher end and purpose, and to demonstrate that believing in him has objective foundation, that is, the miracles that he performed. Okay, so now we ask the question on the lesson, question 2A, what did Jesus do and tell the man to do in order to receive his sight? What eye clinic did he tell him to go to?
What?
Eye clinic. Pool of Siloam. That's a great eye clinic, isn't it? What did Jesus do to him? What did he make the clay out of? What'd you say, Alex? Spit. Spit on the ground, made some clay, put it on his eye, go wash in the pool of Siloam. What does that have to do with him getting his eyesight?
Nothing but that he
done it. Sir?
Nothing but that he done it.
That's it. Nothing but that he did it. I don't know why. You say, why did he do that? I do not know. I know one thing. There's nothing in what he did that got that guy's eyesight back. If there was, there'd have been 10,000 people spitting on the ground and making clay. Pool of Siloam would have been a busy place. You'd have had to get an appointment there. There was nothing about that. I don't know why he did it that way. There's certain things Jesus did sometimes in his miracles that I don't know why he did it that way. Maybe to emphasize the point that there's nothing natural. There's nothing in and of itself about these events. It's so foreign from anything that Luke would have recommended. Luke's a physician. Luke wouldn't have recommended this. It's just so foreign. And yet the guy came back with his sight. And so it points to something. Something that points is a sign. You listen to this story as we're going to read through, and when you hear this story, how do you feel? You feel wonder. What? Tell me that again. Amazed. That's what the miracles were called. Wonders. Wonders. That's what they were for. And so, as verse 6 and 7 said, that's what he did. And so the man did it. Verse 7. You know, there was another fellow that had a severe illness. If you read about in the Bible, he was told to do something simple like that, and he refused. Do you remember who that was?
Naaman.
Go dip in the river Jordan 7 times. What? And at first he wouldn't go, and he had a servant reason with him, and he went. And so he was cleansed. You know, it's interesting. You consider today the waters of baptism. What in the world does dipping a guy in water have to do with the forgiveness of sins? Huh?
Just that he does it.
Just that he does it. He said, do it. I don't know why he chose that. I do not know. There may be a reason, a good reason. I'm just telling you, I don't know what it is. But the forgiveness is in the mind of God. The cleansing of this fellow is not in the clay or in the pool of Siloam. Cleansing is in the power of Jesus. I mean, the healing, excuse me. And so, but he told that man to do it, and he went. Interesting that the man went. Can you imagine how the guy must have felt? What? Why did that guy go? I don't know why he went. Was it desperation? Was there something about Jesus he already knew? Had he heard about his miracles maybe already? We're reading about people and these incidents in the life of Jesus that seem to indicate some familiarity with Jesus. Remember the guy on the cross? Remember me when you come in your kingdom? Where did he learn about that? And so possibly that's the case. I don't know. Remember the centurion? He said, you don't need to come to my house. Just say the word. My servant will be healed. Where did he learn that? So anyway, he went. And so he came back seeing. So one of our questions is, 2B, what was unique about this miracle?
Never done before.
Never. The man said, do you recall anywhere in the Bible this had ever been done? Anywhere, a man born blind, given his sight. You think of all the miracles of the Old Testament. You ever remember a man born blind, given his sight? It's never happened before. This is unique. And so, could Jesus be born of a virgin? Had it ever happened before? No. No. Could a man be raised from the dead never to die again? Certainly. And so, you very unique miracle. And so we asked the question, on what basis did the credibility of this miracle rest? And we gave you several verses. Credibility is the believability, in other words, of this miracle. So as you looked at those verses, on what basis did the credibility of this miracle rest? You weren't there when it happened. You didn't see the man go into the pool and come out seeing. But now you're expected to believe on what basis?
Testimony.
What?
Testimony.
That's it. Testimony. In 9:8-9, the neighbors who had previously saw him as a beggar were saying, is not this the one who used to sit and beg? Others were saying, this is he. Still others were saying, no, he's like him. He kept saying, I am the one. If you were John and you were trying to trump up a story about Jesus to get people to believe in him, what part of this would you leave out? Huh? Any part of this?
The doubters.
Some said, no, that's not him. You know what John's doing? He's just recording the facts. You're over here in the jury box. You got to make a decision. So, the lawyer trying to defend Christ calls these neighbors up. Is this the guy you used to know? Yeah. Does he now say yes? But then the other lawyer calls these other neighbors up. Nah, I don't think that was him. Well, that's interesting. But John records it both. That's one of the things that gives the gospel such credibility. It's just like they're recording truth for the reader to make up his mind about. In verse 20 and 21, what testimony? So let me back up. In 8 through 10, you had the neighbors, and who else's testimony?
The man,
his testimony. Yeah, I'm the one. I'm telling you, I'm he. Can we consider his testimony? Sure. Does it prove the truth of it? No. But it is something to consider. So now when you get down to 20 and 21, whose testimony?
Parents.
Guarantee you they knew their son. And so when they're questioned by the Jewish leaders, when you read Jews here in 18, remember that John so many times in his book is talking about Jewish rulers. They wanted to do everything they could to take this credit away from this guy, Jesus. So they're trying, first of all, to be sure there was even a miracle performed. Maybe they can deny it. But you notice they never, ever were able to deny this happened. And they didn't try after they did their investigation. They did not deny this happened. What they're trying to do is get this man to give credit to somebody else. But right here, they're trying to verify, is this the guy? So they go to the parents. And it's interesting when they question the parents, they said, we know it's our son. We know he was born blind. Now how he sees, we do not know. Who opened his eyes? We do not know. Again, if you're writing this story as a trumped-up story, wouldn't you have those parents saying, man, we went and met that guy, we found him. This is Jesus the Nazarene. I said, we don't know. And so they said, ask him. He's of age, he'll speak for himself. Why did they do that? They're afraid. Afraid of the Jews. Verse 22. And so afraid they'd be kicked out of synagogue. So they said, ask him. So you have the testimony of the parents. Now I've got, look at verse 16. The Pharisees said this. You know, when they asked the man again, verse 15, they weren't satisfied. And so, verse 13, they brought to the Pharisees the man who was formerly blind. It's the Sabbath on the day Jesus had made the clay and opened his eyes. The Pharisees also were asking him, so... the neighbors had given their testimony. The man was saying, it's me. But the Pharisees wanted to do their own investigation. So they asked him how he received his sight. And he told them this fantastic story about some clay put on his eyes and going washing in a pool. And they said, this guy can't be from God because he did it on the Sabbath day. He violated the law, which of course he didn't. They were trying to make him out as a sinner. You'll notice interesting at the end of verse 16, they're not all so persuaded about this argument. There's a division among them. So they asked the blind man again, what do you say about him since he opened your eyes? No, they're not denying this man had his eyes open. Now they're going to later call the parents to try to be sure this is the right guy, but right now they're saying, what do you do? What do you say? What do you say about him? One of the things that's so remarkable about this guy, wouldn't it be lovely to know more about this fellow? What kind of job did he have? If, I don't know if he had any as a blind man. He's just very simple. He's very direct. He's very logical. He said, I'll tell you what I do know. He's a prophet. That much I know. You know, back in verse 12, when they ask... people were asking him about how he got his eyesight. They said to him, verse 12, where is he? He said, I do not know. You know, when you look at this story and you try to think, is there any way this could be a fraud? You know, miracle workers today, so-called, will carry their cast with them. And the idea when they work a miracle, give glory to the miracle worker. Well, boy, if that's what was going on here, this thing... flat flop, because he don't even know where Jesus is. Where is he? I don't know. Who is he? I don't know. Pretty poor planned, if that's what the deal was. And so, when you get down a little later here, and they asked the parents, they said, ask him. But you have the Jews' own testimony when they say, what did he do to open your eyes? And then down in verse 24, a second time they call the man who had been born blind. What are they allowing in verse 24? What?
A miracle
has been worked. They're not denying it anymore. They just say, give glory to God. This guy's a sinner. We don't know how it happened, but this guy didn't do it. That is a backdoor testimony, if you want to call it that, to the fact this happened. And then You get down to verse 26. They said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? What are they admitting? He opened our eyes. I mean, Jesus opened that man's eyes. Look in chapter 10, verse 21. Note in verse 19, a division again occurred again among the Jews because of these words. Many of them were saying, he has a demon, he's insane. Why do you listen to him? Others were saying, these are not the sayings of one demon possessed. Look at this last question. A demon cannot open the eyes of the blind, can he? Isn't that interesting? So you have the testimony of the neighbors, you have the testimony of the man, you have the testimony of the parents, you even have the testimony of the Jewish leaders. And it's interesting about the testimony of the man. In our law today, do you have to testify if you're the center of this trial?
No.
Black guy knows. He's in court every day. No. But this man's really a testifier. Well, what's interesting, you have verse 10 and 11, they ask him, how were your eyes open? He tells this story. Verse 15, they ask him, same question. He gives the same answer to different people on a different occasion. In verse 17, they ask him again, and they said his conclusion was that he was a prophet. So, verse 26, they said, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? But that got under their skin. Never changed his testimony, even under pressure. To different people at different times, he never changed his testimony. And so once again, he said the same thing.
Steve?
Yes.
This man's just courage stands out to me. And just the thing about how he's never seen his whole life, and then now all of a sudden he can see, and he's probably just trying to soak all this in, but now he's put on trial.
Yeah.
Pretty much. But and then he's emboldened to tell these leaders, I already told you, you're not listening. You know, just you can see his tone just... These guys aren't getting it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
he's not afraid of the consequences. They could cut him off. Well, he don't care. I mean, the guy's just honest. And he don't even know who Jesus is. This is not, I'm going to be a supporter. I don't know who he is. I'm just telling you what happened. And then down in 30 through 33, you see his amazing logic. The man answered and said, of course, they're saying, we know God's spoken to Moses, verse 29, after this man, we do not know where he's from. The man answered and said to them, well, here's an amazing thing, that you do not know where he's from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not hear sinners. Sinners here is not put baptism versus non-baptized. It's those who fear God versus those who don't fear God. That's the idea. We've used this verse in the past, brethren, have to say God won't hear somebody who's not baptized. That's not in the context at all. The idea is he's a God-fearing man, somebody that God accepts, because God won't hear people who aren't. You're trying to make him out a sinner, a disobedient man. So that can't be. Here's his logic. And so he said, we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is God-fearing, he does his will and he hears him. Since the beginning of time, it's never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. That's solid, logical reasoning. Man, very logical. There's another guy who drew that kind of a conclusion. Who was it? This was a Jewish ruler. Who? Well, Gamaliel didn't believe in Jesus. There's a man who, very similar to this, Jewish ruler.
Nicodemus.
Nicodemus did. John chapter 3 said something very similar. Nobody can do what you're doing unless God's with you. That's just logic. If this happened, he's got to be somebody approved by God. And that's what the miracles were designed to prove. So the man said, man not saying he's the son of God. He just said, I know God and this man are on the same page. That much I know. He's not a sinner. I know that much. I give him the credit for being a prophet. Prophets did work miracles. And so that's all he says he knows right now. And so, verse 34, they answered him, "You're entirely born in sin. You're teaching us pride." Boy, pride's a crippler. Yes, John?
I see here something in this story. I see two conflicts. I see there's prejudice and there's a guy without prejudice. These guys hate Jesus no matter what he does. So they're going against Jesus. And then here's a man who doesn't even know who Jesus is. Has no idea. And he's just defending something out of simply what happened.
That's an excellent observation. And when you're prejudiced, what happens to you?
You become blind.
You're blind. The man who's just being honest, what about his eyes? They're open. Whatever. Wherever it leads. That's the difference. That's right. And so, today, this same kind of argument is made. We're the learned. We're the ones that know things. Nobody would tell you, would they, Mark? We're the anointed of God. Don't question us. Oh, Mark, there he is. Yeah. They wouldn't say that, would they, Mark? Mark had that happen to it. Who are you, you dummy? I mean, that's not what they said to Mark, but that was the essence of it. And so they put him out. So, we may tend to discount something that's based on testimony. Let me ask you a question. How do you know that 2 plus 2 is 4? What? That's all? You just, somebody told you? Put it on a piece of paper?
You observe it.
You observe it. It's by proof. You can go take two apples. Here's one, two. Here's two more. Count them. There's four. Demonstration. Right? How do you know the Declaration of Independence was signed in 1776?
Historical evidence.
Historical evidence. Do you believe that 2 plus 2 is 4 stronger than you believe the Declaration of Independence was signed in 1776? No. You believe something proved by demonstration, but you also believe just as strongly something that's based on historical evidence. How do you know that food is nutritious? You can eat it and experience it, right? How do you know that cyanide is poisonous?
Observation.
Observation? You see somebody die with cyanide? Testimony. You read about it. You hear about it. Testimony. Do you believe that food is nutritious, stronger than you believe that cyanide is poisonous? Would you act upon that which you know by testimony as strongly as you would by that which you know by experience? Would you avoid cyanide as strongly as you'd choose food to eat?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Don't let anybody tell you your faith is on a weak foundation. That is not so. You cannot operate in this world without testimony. We act upon things that are based on testimony. The question is, this man deals with this every day in the court. Is the testimony credible? Is it true? That's the issue. And our faith is a historical faith based on testimony. Okay, when you get down here to well, let me just say something about this Part D before I mention this other thing. People say miracles are impossible, that they're contrary to the laws of nature. What is that? What is the presupposition to that kind of statement?
That the Lord is bound by the laws of nature.
Exactly. That there's not a being that can override the laws of nature. That's right. They're not contrary to it. There is a being that's in control that can override the laws of nature. So once you grant the possibility there is a supreme being, no, miracles are not impossible. That's not true. So there's sufficient cause for this effect if there is a God. That's the thing. You got to say, is there sufficient cause for this effect? Yes, there is. So the man, he came to the man. Good grief, I'm out of time. He said, do you believe in the Son of Man? That's a statement. That's a messianic statement. Based back on Daniel 7, Jesus used it of himself when he talked about coming in judgment, judging the world, those kind of things. It's a messianic statement. And the man said, I believe. And so we asked the, sir?
Mine says the Son of God.
You could say Son of God. You certainly could. And so what did the man see that Jesus commended him for? Who he was. He saw who he was, the Messiah, and he saw that what he did was proof of that. It was sufficient proof of that. He saw that. The Jews saw the miracle, right? The Jews saw Jesus, but they couldn't put the two together because of their thing John mentioned, their prejudice, they're blind. He said, if you weren't blind, that is, if you realized you were blind. If you realized it. And that's the problem, they didn't realize it. Yes, sir?
Physically saw that he was the light of the world.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much for your comments tonight. Good comments made tonight. So the Lord willing, we'll get to the next lesson on Sunday morning.